That's a website address. But the counterpart to that website address, and I mentioned it earlier, is the IP address. Remember, every time you connect to the internet, you're connecting through an IP address. It's how a message, a communication, data finds you when you want to receive information or send information. There are two types of IP addresses. The static one, and that was always the same. That's the one that usually remains with big companies. Era, for instance, has a static one. People who need to have an existence online all the time, where they can always be found. And then there's dynamic. Now, this is one that only lasts as long as you are connected. It's a way of making the different internet, sharing out the different internet addresses so there's enough to go round. The important thing is here is that if I turn off the internet now, someone else might be using it in the next session, in the next second, so it gets immediately allocated, which means you have to be very careful when you're doing research, when you're doing an investigation, when you're applying for a warrant or data, that you get the information down to the second. I've been shown some international mutual legal assistance requests which were turned down simply because they weren't specific enough in terms of the timestamp. There are also two types of internet protocol address. There's the IP version 4, which has been around for a long time. But the way it's structured, and we'll see that in a minute, mathematically, you can only do 4.3 billion of them. And as you've seen earlier, there's already more than that more people than that using the internet at the moment. The new one, the IP version 6, been around since the 60s. And there will be enough to go around to everybody. Sorry, I said it had been around since the 60s. I meant been around since the 90s. It's not that old. And there will be enough for everybody. But it's taking a long time to filter through. Now, this is ERA's IP version 4 website address, Internet Protocol address. And you'll see it consists of four sections, each separated by a dot, each between 2 and 255, those numbers. And if you added them all together, as I said, mathematically, you'd find you only had 4.3 billion. The Internet Protocol version 6, IP version 6, looks something like this. And you'll see FFFF there. But the Fs are actually a kind of notation used in a numbering system called hexadecimal. It's actually a number. And there are enough for everybody for the foreseeable future. Everybody at birth could be allocated an IP version 6 address. But again, it's taking a long time to filter through to be used. IP addresses are geographically specific. That's because of their height. They're allocated in a hierarchical form, and there'll be an IP an internet service provider in your area which will be allocated a certain group or range of IP addresses, and they are based in a certain area. So it's possible to identify the country, but certainly the internet service provider, they aren't 100% accurate. Sometimes they can be, but normally you'll just get a general location, and then you can go to the internet service provider and ask them for the subscriber details and where it was connected at a certain time. The internet service provider will keep a record of the use of that IP address. And just again to underline the fact that if you have a dynamic IP address and you're making some kind of legal service or legal order, you need to make sure you get it timestamped to the second. So what happens if you get it wrong? Well, here's a bit of an embarrassing case, and you can check out the report for yourselves there if you go to that link at the bottom of the page. This comes from the Information Commissioner's report in 2016. It was a case involving alleged blackmail to incite sexual acts by children over social media. One of the nasty things that's happening with the internet. Unfortunately, the search warrant targeted the wrong house. There was a raid, and you can imagine that in this particular type of offence, the people executing the search warrant may not have been entirely sympathetic to the people on the premises. But there were four occupants. Two of them were children, and they were interviewed. Social services were called along, and the children were taken away into care. And all the digital devices were taken away to be forensically examined. And that's also a labour-intensive, expensive activity. But there was a problem. When the information was sent to the commercial service provider asking for details of who was using that IP address at that particular time, they'd got the date and the month around the wrong way. I mean, you know how in Europe we normally put the day first and then the month. In America, you put the month and the day. It's another thing to watch. So, four people, two children, had their lives turned upside down in a very nasty way because of a very simple mistake. IP addresses, apart from getting them wrong by putting a day and date around the wrong way in an application, can also be faked or borrowed or hidden. And let me give you some examples of that. You can use a public access point. You can go to the library or to a cafe, to a Starbucks or an airport and use their public Wi-Fi. You can piggyback, and that what I mean by that is you can find somewhere else where, that you can access it from a distance, an open one somewhere. Not so many these days. There used to be a thing called war driving where people would sit in a car and drive around and see where there was an open access point and connect through there. But there's a version of that now because people tend not to secure their wireless routers by changing the password, for instance. If they still leave the default password on the device, then it can be accessed. Then you have compromised devices, so things that have been hacked. So a hacker or a criminal can be using someone's device without their knowledge and using it to transfer information further on the road. Now, that also means it can be quite difficult if you're a prosecutor, for instance. You have to negate the fact that that hasn't happened. And there was quite a high-profile case in the United States regarding child porn on the internet, where the defense was, look, I don't dispute the fact that my computer had been used in this way for transmitting pedophile material. But it had been hacked and someone had been doing that without my knowledge. Because the prosecution had not negated that in terms of their case, the suspect was acquitted. There's a thing called a proxy server, and that is the possibility to, from your house to use a server, a computer somewhere else to access the internet so that everybody else in the world thinks that that is your location. And then there are virtual private networks. They're like proxy servers with knobs on. It's like a proxy server, but the data between you and that proxy server is encrypted. We'll look again at those in a little while. And then we have anonymizers. Now, if a VPN, a virtual private network, is a proxy server with knobs on, an anonymizer is a supercharged proxy server with knobs on. And finally, something called carrier-grade NAT. You remember I told you that there weren't enough IP version 4 addresses to go around? Well, one of the ways that service providers have made them stretch out so they have enough to go around is something called a carrier-grade network address translation. Sorry, but all these acronyms, there's the world of internet is full of them. But in this case, it basically means they use one IP address to service lots of different customers. So you may have hundreds of people all appearing to use the same IP address. And this is all important because one of the key elements, if you're investigating over the internet, is something called attribution. That means you have to, as I said before, be sure that when you get back, you trace the data back to its source. When you track the suspect down, you have to make sure you've got the right place and the right person. This is a very simple example. So back in 2015 in California, someone burgled a house and they got away with a 65-inch smart TV. It had Netflix. And with Netflix, as I'm sure you know if you have it, it's the same with me, every time you access Netflix, you get an email saying a new device has used your Netflix account. And this is what happened with the victim in this case. So the genius had stolen the 65-inch television and then used it to watch Netflix. The police obviously obtained the IP address, got the address from the service provider, and raided that address. And there was nothing there. Again, another case of a search warrant gone wrong. But not quite in this occasion, because when they explained to the house owners why they were there, they explained they allowed their neighbour to use their Wi-Fi account. Remember I was telling you about piggybacking? Well, this is a situation just like that. And this young man was arrested and went to prison. Let's talk a little bit more about virtual private networks. Remember, virtual private networks are proxy servers with knobs on, and this is why. If you have a look at that, I don't know if you can see it, it might be a bit small on your screen, but that indicates that I'm in Tokyo. You can see I've got an IP address there. You can even, you can't quite see it there, but they'll even give you a map and show you roughly where I am. It'll tell you that I was using a Chrome browser and my operating system was Windows 10, but I wasn't in Japan. How was that? Well, because I was using a virtual private network. It's a piece of software which gives you access, as I said, to a server somewhere else in the world, and some of the better ones can be hundreds of places. And so anybody who interacts with me over the internet thinks I'm there. So they enable you to access the internet through a remote, distant computer or server using encrypted communications. And that is very good if you are, for instance, traveling a lot like I do. I stay in hotels, I go through airports, and I don't trust public access points because you never know who is accessing the data. There's a type of hack called man-in-the-middle attack where people will pretend to be the right server and you access the information through them, and they just basically sniff, that is, they collect all the information that you send to the internet. Not good. But a virtual private network protects them from actually getting hold of the details of the information being sent. So if you're innocent, that's very useful. But criminals can also use it to hide where they are. On the positive side, VPN providers will often give details of who was using what VPN when, what VPN server when, but some don't. And of course, technically savvy criminals will use the ones that don't. Some countries are so concerned about this, they ban VPNs. So you can see some of the countries there. I'm not going to make any comment on the type of jurisdictions they are, but you can see what I'm talking about. And here are some of the better known ones. My VPN provider is on the more expensive side. It costs me about $90 a year to use, and I can use it on multiple devices. But I get a selection of a lot of different countries. So if I'm traveling a lot, I can access a local server normally, and it helps with the internet speed and reliability and stability and things like that. My particular Express VPN also allows me to watch Netflix. Some of the others won't, because when you use a VPN, one of the downsides is some websites will detect you're using a VPN and won't let you access it because of security reasons. VPNs are also included in some antivirus internet security packages. Mine has it, but I don't use it very much. I'm sure you too. Here's an interesting one, though. Some web browsers have started to do it now. This is the Opera browser, and you can see if you look at the bottom of the page there that they have a VPN, and there are two or three others as well. Epic does it, and I think Brave does too. I think it's only a matter of time before other browsers include that function. But even so, with a VPN, with a web browser that has this kind of functionality, there's also a thing called WebRTC. And if you don't know about it, it's a facility to allow communications to work better over the internet through a browser. And sometimes browsers will actually leak your true IP address through that, unless it's disabled, of course. So we've spoken roughly some of the background, but let's just have a look at something else here. Look, let's consider that is the internet, and your internet service provider, as we know, will allocate you a unique internet protocol address. But what happens if you're in a school or an office or a bar, as I said before? All those different devices will all be accessing the internet through that same IP address. Well, that's where your MAC address comes in. If you want to be able to identify which device you are interested in, the MAC address can help. The MAC address identifies the device on the network. It's built in to the internet card, a piece of hardware on your device, and it can't be changed. You can actually trace the manufacturer from a MAC device, from a MAC address, which is helpful because if you're then looking at lots of different devices, that gives you an indication. It's not normally broadcast beyond the network, but it does sometimes leak. I told you about WebRTC, but this is another way of doing it, and with some IP version 6 addresses. And here's a quick way to find your MAC address if you're using Windows 10. You do the Windows key plus R, you'll get a window like that. You type in CMD, that stands for command, and you get a window like that. Now those little colored pixels you won't get, but that's because I'm hiding some information that I consider to be my own personal data. Then you type in the command ipconfig space stroke all, and you'll get something like this. And if you then look down to the thing that's called a physical address, and again you'll see that I have cunningly disguised some of the data there. But the physical address, your MAC address, will look something like that. That's 6 sections. And again, that D that you can see there is actually a number using hexadecimal system. MAC addresses are hard-coded, which means they can't be changed, so you would think that would be a good way of identifying a suspect device on a network. But they can be changed using a piece of very simple, very free software like that. Now at the moment you can see that showing my original MAC address, and the active MAC address is the same as the original, but within seconds I can click a button and it will change. So the network thinks I'm a different computer. Interesting, eh? So there are lots of identifiers, but for every identifier you find, there's something that can mask it, there's something that can block it to obstruct your investigation. I mentioned how many mobile devices we use to access the internet. Well, here's another example with the phones. There's a thing called an IMEI number, International Mobile Equipment Identity Number. That's got another term as well called MEID, Mobile Equipment Identifier. That's like having a MAC address, but on your phone. It's hard-coded again, just like a MAC address, into the device. And you can also, if you can find your device, your IMEI number, you can trace it back, find out the make and model of the phone by going to that website there. Its function normally is to identify the device on your telecommunications network. And that's how you can find your IMEI number. In most cases, some phones may differ, but if you type in star, and it depends if you call that a hash or a pound, 06 hash sign, you'll see on your screen your IMEI number. Sometimes you'll see two IMEI numbers, for instance, if you've got two SIM card slots.